This is HPR episode 2712 entitled Steganography. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 22 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu wraps up his miniseries about steganography.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, folks. Kay Wisher here to remind you that it's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve show. For those who don't know, on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2018, at 10 a.m. UTC, that is 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will have a recording going on the HPR Mumble server for anyone to come on and say Happy New Year and talk about whatever they want. We will leave the recording going until January 1st, 2019, 12 a.m. UTC, that will be 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or until the conversation stops. Please visit hackerpublicradio.org to find all the details and links about how to set up the PC Mumble client, your favorite mobile app, the mobile server connection details, our Etherpad show notes, and the live audio stream if you only prefer to listen in on the lively banter. So please stop in and say hi, and maybe join in the conversation with other HPR listeners and contributors. It's always a good time.
To Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. I'm the host today, and this is my final episode in the mini series on steganography that I've been doing. Some of you may not have known that I was doing a mini series on steganography because I didn't really announce it in audio. I did make a note of it, just kind of for fair, as a fair warning. I made a note of it in the show notes that I was doing a mini series on steganography, but I didn't elaborate on how this was a series about steganography, because apparently the first two episodes were actually not about steganography at all. So first of all, let's talk about what steganography is. And I'm just going to go straight to Wikipedia and read out what the widely accepted definition is. Steganography is the practice of concealing a file, message, image, or video within another file, message, image, or video. The word steganography combines the Greek words steganos, meaning covered, concealed, or protected, and graphein, meaning writing. So there you go. That's what steganography is. It's sending secret messages, which, I mean, give me a break. As a kid, that was all I ever wanted out of life, was to be able to send secret messages to somebody. That seemed really cool to me. So I thought I'd do a little mini-series about it to kind of maybe demonstrate just how to get started with steganography. I'm certainly no expert, but it's something that I find pretty interesting. So the first principle would be in steganography, well, aside from the definition, which I guess we could call that the zeroth principle. That's what steganography is, right? So I would say that one of the first things to keep in mind when deciding to engage in steganography is that really good steganography is not something that you recognize as steganography. I mean, someone ought to recognize it, I guess, because if you're sending a message, there's the implication that you have someone that you want to have receive that message. So if they don't know to look for it or where to look, then it's no longer steganography. Almost, it could probably just be argued that it's just your message might be there, but it's just basically bloat because no one knows that it is there, and so you've just sort of shouted into the world. But maybe that's what you want to do. Maybe you just want the thing there. And who knows how many files on your computer today you've downloaded from the internet has some message concealed in it that wasn't meant for you and is not being seen by you. Who knows? I don't know. So the fact that I was doing a mini-series on steganography quite literally probably would have not been known hadn't I included a note in the show notes stating that I was doing a miniseries on steganography. And I did that as fair warning because I didn't feel like the Hacker Public Radio audience, I mean, the Hacker Public Radio audience, I believe, sort of, at least in part, trusts me as a person. And so I didn't want to include information, you know, in Hacker Public Radio material without telling you or at least implying that there might be something else going on. So I did that as a, I guess, a courtesy, but also because none of you know would know to look for a message if I hadn't stated, hey, this has a message embedded in it, or there this is about steganography, which is a little bit of a tip that there may be something somewhere that isn't as simple as it seems. So in the first episode in Scribus, I was talking about, I was talking about a program, Scribus, and innocently mentioned that the end goal of Scribus very frequently was to produce a PDF. And so I stepped through the process of making the PDF file from Scribus, kind of talked about some of the different options and so on. And then I posted the Scribus file and the resulting PDFs online. And to someone who hadn't read the show notes, they would have gone to the link probably, and they would download the file, and for them it would be, or who hadn't read the show notes carefully, you'd have to read them to get the link. But you go there, you download the thing, you'd look at it, it would be exactly what it claimed to be. It's a Scribus file with some fonts and some images and two PDFs, and that's it. And that's fair enough. That's exactly what was advertised, and you can disassemble the Scribus file and you can look at the resulting PDFs, and you'll have hopefully learned something. That was the goal of that episode. At least that was one of the goals of the episode, to teach people about Scribus, because I think it's a great application, and I think people do kind of overthink it and kind of get confused about it. So there you go, Scribus. It does this thing. Second episode was about GhostScript. And once again, there's actual application to this episode. It's actually really useful information. If you have PDFs that are really, really big and ugly and you need to print them and you just want to use just your black ink and you don't want to have to print a bunch of images that you're never going to look at anyway, or if you can't get the PDF to load on your stupid little mobile because your mobile's not powerful enough to render all these images quickly, then this is a great tip. GhostScript can help you with both of those problems, and I use it very frequently for my own stuff, and it's very useful. So once again, there was real actual information in those episodes, and I feel like they were both useful in and as of themselves. Now, in the GhostScript episode, I kind of mentioned at the end that you could look at PDFs, like at the source of PDFs, like you can look into a PDF by opening it in Emacs, and you can see that there are streams of binary data that you can't really read. It's just a bunch of binary bits, and PDFs open even with these things deleted. Well, as it turns out, PDFs also open with new information inserted into these streams. Now, it doesn't always work, and you have to play around where you can insert it and where, you know, what breaks and what doesn't break. But if you do download the files that I provided from the Scribus episode, if you download those files and you do Emacs example-nobleed.pdf, and like I said in the original episode, it'll try to render that file for you to make it look pretty and stuff. And you can get around that with Control-C, Control-C. And then if you scroll down in Emacs, you're looking at all this ugly text. Keep scrolling down to line, I think it was 651. Yep, there it is. 651, then you'll find that the ugly binary data that's in there by default, or, you know, as part of the actual PDF, sort of comes to an end. I mean, I'm saying this, I'm speaking this, and frankly, it's really not that easy to tell. You'll see it once you see it, but you won't, it is not immediately obvious. Because it looks like a bunch of gobbledygook then ends up as a bunch of other gobbledygook, and you can't really tell the two from one another if you're not sort of looking for it. I mean, it depends on how much syntax highlighting and stuff you have on too. But 651 starts this block, which is actually, of course, you're probably already figuring out where I'm going with this, but it's actually a block of base 64. So if you extract that block of text, just the stuff from 651, literally on line 651. So 652 is the word end stream. So just the text on 651, if you extract that, put it into its own file. So I'll just select it, Control Space, to set my mark. Go all the way down to 652. Control W to cut it. And now I'll do a new file. Control X, Control F. I'll just call it base.64. Return and then paste it in there. Okay, so Control X, Control S to save. Control X, Control C to close. Now I have a new file called base.64. I can decode that with base 64. That's BASE 64 dash D for decode. Space and then base, I called it base.64, and then redirect into file.og. And I told you that the key you needed was og in the original episode, in the show notes rather, sorry. So again, I mean, in order for this to be useful, you would have to have known that it was there. I can't see people stumbling across it and then saying, oh, I wonder if it's an og file and so on. So, I mean, maybe, but probably not. And now if you do all of that, if you've done all of that, then you end up with an audio file that sounds a little bit something like this. Hey there, clever listener. You have discovered an embedded audio file in a PDF. If you contact me at klaatu@member.fsf.org before my reveal of this secret file has been aired, then I will send you, no matter where you are in the world, a free copy of my game, Petition, and you have my eternal respect for having found this in advance. And that's it. That was the steganographized message. It was a little audio file embedded in a PDF. So the audio file came out to like 52 kilobytes. So adding it into a, I don't know, whatever the actual file ended up being, I think it was Nobleed. So it was about 900 kilobytes. Integrating the base 64 version of that audio file in the PDF was really quite trivial. Now, it could have been anything. It could have been an audio file. It could have been an image. It could have been text that was encoded into something else. It could be text that was GPG encoded, and then the GPG stuff could have been pasted in there. You know, there's any number of things you could embed into that particular file format, and the PDF very frequently doesn't care. Again, you'll probably have to test this in practice, but it is as straightforward as I have just made it sound, so there's not a whole lot for me to say otherwise. So because the process has been drawn out over several different episodes, I'm going to condense everything here. I'm going to talk about exactly how to replicate what I've done, just in case you're not clear on it. So the first step would be to get or to create a PDF. I created my own in Scribus because I could, because it was a good excuse to do a Scribus episode, right? So create a PDF or get a PDF. Then open that PDF in a text editor. I use Emacs, but I imagine several other good text editors would work just as well. Again, in Emacs, it'll try to render it, so do Control-C, Control-C to get out of that view. Scroll through the PDF and find the clause or the phrases that start with the word stream and end with the word end stream. There will be a lot in there because this is basically all the important stuff in a PDF is encoded in this completely undecipherable binary blob. And that binary blob is contained within stream and end stream. Now, from what I can tell, and I'd have to look at the PDF spec to really determine whether this is correct, but from what I can tell, if something's in a stream and before the end stream tag, so if something's in those tags or in those buffeted by those two words, stream and in-stream. Well, and there's something to do with the object as well. But anyway, so if they're in there, if it's in there and it's not referred to directly by the PDF structure, then it just gets ignored. I mean, that's as far as I can tell. So you should be able to insert data into a stream and not really see any kind of failure. Now, there are exceptions. There's one stream and in stream. I think the first one usually seems to define the page area or maybe the active area of the page maybe. And I've broken a lot of PDFs by messing with that too much. So I kind of avoid the first one, but you can try. I mean, it could depend on the PDF and could depend on what exactly you're doing, mucking around in there, what you delete, what you keep, etc. So, but inserting data, from what I can tell, is generally pretty harmless. Now the question is how to get that data into a form that you can just paste into a text editor, right? Well, the answer there, the common answer, is base 64. And base64 is a command that you probably already have on your Linux machine. If not, you can install it. Just search around for it. And base64 translates the contents of a file into base64 encoding, which happens to be very friendly for pasting into text editors because it is alphanumerically based. So if you do a if you just go into your images folder or something, wherever you keep photos, or go into your music folder, whatever it is, do base64 and then point it at some file. This is non-destructive, don't worry. So it's not going to do anything to your file. It reads the file and then outputs base64. Now, if you just type in base64 space, you know, my vacation photo.jpg, then it's going to spit out a bunch of stuff. You probably don't really want that. So I'm just going to pipe that to head. So base64, here's landscape.jpg, pipe head. And there's a pretty good representation of base64 for you. Okay, so the way to do this in Emacs is you would do the base64 and then whatever you're trying to embed, whether it's an audio file or a text file or whatever, or a photograph, and then you redirect it, so that's the greater than symbol, to some file. So let's just say base64.txt. There, now it's just dumped the base64 version of this photo that I'm using as an example into a file called base64.txt, located in my pwd photos directory. Okay, so now I'd go back to Emacs, and my cursor is somewhere within that stream and in stream, somewhere in there. I'm not going to interrupt the binary flow. I'm just going to put it right before or right after all that binary data. So in other words, right after the word stream or right before the word end stream. And then I'm going to do it at Control X and then I. So that's just Control X and then take your fingers off and then press I, the I key. That means insert the contents of a file. And then you can navigate, you can point Emacs to the file that you want to insert, which in this case is home clatu photos base64.txt, return, and that dumps the contents of base64.txt right into the PDF. Control X, Control S to save. Control X, Control C to close, and now go back out to your file manager and click on that PDF to make sure that it still opens in your PDF viewer and that it's not completely mangled or corrupted or that it hasn't done anything too strange. But if your experience is anything like mine, it will open and act exactly as it always has. Now, things to look out for here. You can break the PDF, you probably should review the PDF pretty closely, because sometimes it's weird random things that go awry, like a color channel gets thrown off, so everything looks pink instead of blue or whatever. So if you've done something bad, you'll see it, but it might not be immediately obvious. As I said in, I think, my second episode, the ghost script one, if you delete binary data, sometimes it'll delete unexpected things. You know, it'll just delete the letter F from one paragraph because whatever you deleted just happened to be the letter F from a thing that was tracing a font, and you deleted that glyph or whatever. So look out for that sort of thing, and also look out for what you're dumping into a PDF, because certainly if a PDF is expected to be 23 megabytes, 100 megabytes, whatever, let's say 100 megabytes, because PDFs are all too often very large. If it's expected to be 100 megabytes and you deliver one that is 200 megabytes, then someone's going to think, gee, that's odd, and they're going to either use GhostScript to compress it more, or they're going to open it up in a Adobe Acrobat Reader or something, and something's going to tip them off, right, that there's a big blob of data in that file that shouldn't be there. Now, on the other hand, if it's a re-implementation of an existing PDF, then take a look at the size of the PDF, use GhostScript to compress it down, and then use your own steganographized message to bloat it back up to where it used to be. And now suddenly, if you've got an existing 33 megabyte PDF, and you're sending out a 32.3 size PDF, that's not a big deal, right? That's basically the same size. Now, little do people know that all the images have been down-resed to 150 dpi instead of 300 dpi, and the rest of the bloat there is a hidden message from you, then that's a better hidden message than something that causes a PDF to bloat back up to 200 megabytes or whatever. So Base64 should not be mistaken as encryption. It is not. It in no way actually conceals your message. I mean, it does for people who don't know how to manipulate Base64, but generally speaking, that it's not. Don't think of it as encryption. It is not. It is simply encoding and decoding a message from one character set essentially to another. So decoding Base64, as I've already said, is as easy as typing in Base64-D for decode or --decode, and then a file containing all of that Base64 data, and then redirect that to some other file, and you're done. That's it. So it in no way really conceals your message or it doesn't encrypt your message, in other words. It simply transforms it into a format friendly to being pasted in somewhere. Obviously, the danger here would be that it is discoverable. I mean, it is. We say it's not in plain sight. It's concealed. But at the same time, I mean, I guess people could find it, right? I mean, it would be something that you could feasibly discover. So you would want to make sure that if it was a message that mattered to you, you would want to make sure that it was somehow encrypted and made into something that was not, I guess, decipherable very easily. But it is something. I mean, that's a vector. That is a thing that you can do into PDFs. And there's a lot more you can do with PDFs. It's a really bizarrely bloated and forgiving format. It's so easy to put stuff into a PDF. It's kind of frightening. And yet PDFs are so common. I mean, you can make PDFs on any subject matter and distribute it and appear like that's all you're doing is distributing subject. You're distributing this PDF on this very specific subject. And then as a steganography exercise, you could have a completely different message integrated into that PDF for those who know where to look. So hopefully this has been informative, and hopefully my little proof of concept has shown that steganography done right wouldn't appear as steganography at all and yet be just as effective. I mean, I tipped my hand by tipping you off that this was a mini series about steganography. But aside from that, I feel like there was really not a whole lot to indicate that my shows weren't completely innocent and just about creating and compressing PDFs. Thanks for listening. I will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.